On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, Jeff Passan of ESPN, he knows a thing or two about Major League Baseball. He joins us to preview the trade deadline. We talk Scooble. Of course, we talk Scooble. All the scenarios we can possibly imagine. Could he possibly not get traded? Probably not, but we speculate anyway. And then we just ask Jeff, what teams are you thinking about as this deadline approaches? Who is going to become a main character? And then we dig into the meta that is all caps breaking. One of my favorite conversations of the season. And then it's Friday, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. Don't worry, folks. It's still Baseball Barbacast. All that and more. Let's do it.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that's going to ask ESPN's Jeff Passan about Ryan Stanek. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. That's Jeff Passan. Ain't nothing dead about this deadline. Am I right, Jeff?
Dude, you got me off the rails within the first 5 seconds of the show. And this is not like deadline. Yeah, exactly. This is not like deadline-induced mania either. Like, that's going to come usually like the day before the deadline. I always have, like, breaking news-wise, I don't know why, I always just have, like, one really bad day. And I know it's coming, and I don't know which day it's going to be, and it's haunting me already. Just knowing that the baseball gods are looking down and saying for one day they're going to make me feel like the biggest sack of in the world.
Yeah.
Which you are.
Well, that's right. And I think that those listening on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast over the next half an hour will be like, yep. That's Jeff Passan, our favorite sack. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to have you on. And I do think that, you know, when we're asking, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have you on the show before. We've done the off-season kind of preview version of it. But in this point, it's like, oh, is that a little too close to the deadline? But these teams sure love to procrastinate. And with the deadline being literally later than ever, August 3rd is the latest we have ever had this date. Teams will have played more games than ever before the deadline. Has that changed? Have you sensed that that's changed in recent years, that teams are actually progressing more than ever, or has it always been this way?
I think it's probably gotten a little more extreme in recent years. It is funny to talk with GMs around this time of year, because yesterday I was on the phone with one and he's like, how do you feel? I was like, I don't know. I'm okay. Why? He's like, dude, deadline passed. It's like, what do you mean the deadline passed? It's like, it's July 31st. Aren't we done with this? And I was like, is your body clock genuinely wired to be done with something when we're 3 days out? He's like, dude, I just want this to be over. I was like, me too, my man. Like, we're the same totally Spider-Man meme right there. And yeah, it throws me off a little. It's whatever. I just look at it like it's going to be a day at some point, and I know that they are going to wait almost until the very end, because we see this in every element of baseball. Whenever there's a deadline, everything pushes up until it's imminent, and that's where we are right now. We've got imminence upon us.
Professors hate to see a baseball executive coming. One executive that wishes this would end very quickly is Tigers President of Baseball Operations, Scott Harris, a man whose job this weekend I do not envy, a man who will be losing a great deal of sleep as he is tasked with trading away one of the greatest pitchers of a generation. Tarek Skubal, Jeff, you have said repeatedly, is going to get dealt. And for the remainder of this show, we're going to assume that that is the case. It is Friday, July 31st, 9:13 a.m. Tarek Skubal, is he getting traded? Yes or no?
Yes.
Jordan, we have asked this question basically every episode for the last 2 months. You have wavered. You said no earlier this week. What do you believe? Yes or no?
I think when Jeff went on ESPN a couple of days ago and without hesitation was like, yeah, what are you, stupid? Of course he's getting traded. I was like, okay, fine. Tarek Skubal's getting traded. I finally believe it. I have gone back and forth like I think a lot of other people in the industry. But at this point, I think Jeff knows what he's talking about. So how did we – actually, here's a way to put that. When did you arrive at that conclusion with such confidence, Jeff? Because, of course, we've been speculating about this for months. – but was there a point during the Tigers' resurgence where you started to have some doubt? And when did you then swing back to, this is obviously happening?
I still have like the smallest sliver of doubt because Max Clark comes up, the Tigers sweep this weekend, and they're still, you know, three games under 500 at that point. They're still, yeah, in the best case scenario, a game and a half back of the wild card. If everything breaks right, you can make that argument. But I just get back to a very simple thing, which is, how is all of this being valued? And if the Tigers hold on to Tarek Skubal, then provided they get underneath the luxury tax threshold, which they're not right now, by the way, if they don't get underneath the luxury tax threshold and they keep Skubal and they don't make the playoffs, they're getting a fourth round draft pick. So at very least, if they do keep Skubal, I think they're going to have to shed some money to get under that threshold, because that would at least get them a first round pick. But the 30th or so pick, guys, I'll defer to you a little on this one, Jordan. What's it worth? Like, when organizations are straight up nerding out and assigning a dollar value to every pick, I think the 30th pick is about $10
million. $10
million. Yeah, that's about right. Although I will say, because we've seen some of those picks traded, including this year for Patrick Bailey, and I'm still like grappling with what that means. different teams might do it differently. I think that a pick in the top 40 is significant, but we're still talking about Tarek Skubal.
We would all agree, though, right, is that whatever package the Tigers do get back is going to be more valuable than that pick. Right. The question just becomes, you're adding
way more.
You're adding like, yeah, way more. You're adding like the chance of making the playoffs this year and not dealing with the PR blowback of trading Skubal. In my mind, the question we're gonna learn is, how punk rock is Scott Harris? Is he going to do the Leo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street and I'm not effing leaving and just cling the Skubal and go down with the ship? That would be one, stupid, and two, cool as hell.
Yeah, I've been on national television and have said Tarek Skubal will be traded. If he doesn't get traded, I'll almost be more excited. Just because it's like, I can never begrudge anyone for going for it. I think 100%. It would be ill-advised. I think it would be short-sighted. I think it would be, in a baseball sense, a stupid thing to do. But I'm still extremely down with the idea. I love the Wolf of Wall Street's perfect, actually. And here's the thing. You know who would love that more than anyone? Like, Tarek Skubal would love that.
Yes.
He would be the one who walks into the clubhouse and flips the table and says, let's go f***ing win this thing, boys. Like, that's 100% his attitude.
And I do want to briefly zoom into Skubal the person, because I feel like that has been lost in a lot of this, where when we discuss two-time Cy Young Award winner Tarek Skubal, there's this almost this assumption that he would like to be somewhere else for the rest of the season so that he could be in the playoff mix. All indications are he would prefer to stay in Detroit for the remainder of the season. Can we believe that? Can we not? Who's to say? Yeah. But as you kind of look at the Skubal sweepstakes, how do you contextualize him as a character, as an operator, as this on-mound presence?
I mean, there's a reason that all the best teams in baseball are lined up to get him. And it's because they know that the stuff is elite and they know that he's not scared and they've seen him in big games. And just the prospects, what teams are doing right now is dreaming of what they look like. When Tarek Skubal's there, how does this fundamentally demonstrably change our chances to win the World Series? And for the Dodgers, it's just sort of like, hey, we got another. And for the Braves, it's like, oh my God, do we have the best left-handed duo in baseball since Rube Waddell and Eddie Plank in the early 1900s for the Philadelphia A's? It really is. I went and looked back at left-handed duos, and that is the last one, two Hall of Famers to match what Chris Sale and Tarek Skubal bring. And if we want to keep it more modern, we could look at CC Sabathia and Cliff Lee in the, you know, mid to late 2000s Cleveland Indians. But I honestly, it's just so awesome. And the Brewers, hey, we saw Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, a righty or a lefty and a righty, take the Arizona Diamondbacks to a World Series almost single-handedly back in 2001. Can we replicate that now? Like, all of these teams are so busy dreaming of Tarek Skubal on one side of their brain, and on the other side of the brain screaming, do not overpay, do not overpay, do not overpay. It's a rental, it's a rental, it's a rental. You're giving up so much. Oh my God, are you really going to give? Like, that's where we are right now. We're at the part of the game right now where the GMs that want to acquire Tarek Skubal are lashing themselves for the value that they are about to propose losing in a deal like this. It is uncomfortable for having such a great outcome in the end.
Jeff, that is a great transition to my last Skubal question, which is about the cost. The teams that you just referenced, those four are really the ones that we've already been speculating about for a few weeks. Obviously, the Dodgers, Atlanta, Milwaukee, Tampa Bay, I think is certainly one when you look at the opportunity ahead of them. In the American League, those are not the only four teams that are rumored or reported to have, you know, called or checked in on Skubal. But when we talk about the cost, that is what I'm so interested about getting to the finish line here, especially as someone who does think about prospects and value and whatever. The way you're describing it makes it sound like we are going to end up at a quote-unquote irresponsible place from a you're trading for a rental. Hey, here's another factor you didn't mention. This dude got arm surgery this year. He has multiple arm surgeries on his track record, right? And I know he's started to look a lot better and more like himself, but that has to be part of the risk tolerance that you're also considering. When we get to the end of this, if you've said it, he's going to get traded. And if Scott Harris does decide we have to trade him no matter what, are those favorites going to sort of be able to hold the line and not have it get to, for example, $765 million? Or, if you know what I'm saying, or are we going to end up with a prospect package that is so far beyond anything that we even could have speculated when we started to put these packages together over the last few months? Although I will also point out that because of the arm surgery and because of the rental element, maybe we end up closer to something that's just like, yeah, you can only give up so much for an asset like this. Where do we end up on that spectrum?
This is the entirety of my weekend right here. Like trying to figure out just how far are these teams going to go? And I don't know the answer to that yet. If you're Scott Harris, though, where you're starting at very least is at the top of every system. And if you ask for Jesus Mate from the Milwaukee Brewers, it's pretty reasonable that you're going to be told no. He's the number one overall prospect in baseball. He's a teenage switch-hitting shortstop with power and with the ability to stay on the dirt, and he's awesome. And so I don't think it's particularly reasonable there. But then you go to the Dodgers, for example, their number one prospect, Josue De Paula, you know, a Jordan Alvarez looking outfielder who has produced at every level he's been at. Would the Dodgers include him? I probably wouldn't think so. I mean, you never know, like, when this goes along, just how desperate teams are going to get or what another team's offer is going to push them to do. But I think the same thing goes for Theo Gillen and the Rays. You know, the Rays don't buy rentals usually. One of the last times they bought a rental of any significance was Nelson Cruz, and they gave up Joe Ryan for him. And so, you know, it's not the trades that you win that stick with you if you're a general manager. It's the trades you don't. Those are the ones that you remember. And I don't think anyone would ever begrudge any of these general managers for going out and giving up too much in pursuit. Really, if we distill this, it's in pursuit of a championship. It's the clearest thing that you can do to pursue a championship of any of these things. So even if you do overpay, I don't know that anyone's going to sit here and slime you for it. But part of me also wonders if, you know, let's say Mate won't go, let's say DePaula won't go, let's say Theo Gillen won't go from any of the three big favorites. Is having that number one prospect from another team come back something that public relations-wise is important to the Detroit Tigers? Like, do they want to win this deal? And if so, can the Atlanta Braves say, here's Eric Hartman, boys, and we'll also throw in Cam Caminiti. And you know what? If you want another pitcher who's closer to big league ready, here's J.R. Richey. And, you know, among the teams, I was talking with somebody last night who said, keep an eye on Atlanta. Now, this doesn't mean that the Braves are going to, you know, leap over the Dodgers or the Rays or the Brewers, who frankly have better farm systems than them and have more access to that depth rather than that top end guy. But if the carrying piece is the important thing for Scott Harris, then it's going to be interesting to see what direction all these teams go with that.
So I want to ask specifically about the pitcher versus position player side of things, because when you look at the Tigers farm system, it might be the most bat heavy group in the entire minor leagues. I mean, they have very few arms matriculating up the system.
The Brewers are pretty similar, at least they're top end guys right now. And even the Dodgers, you know, I was talking with one team last night that was looking at the Dodgers system, and the first 9 players were bats, and 7 of them were outfielders.
Now, the reason I bring this up is because Scott Harris, when he trades Skubal, is going to say something to the effect of, we believe that the 2027 Tigers can compete for a championship. Whether that is true or not, that is going to be the spin, right? Do you think that he is going to be prioritizing young, controllable, big league ready pitching, where he's going to build a package around, say, a Logan Henderson or a Robert Gasser with the Brewers, or a Emmett Sheehan with the Dodgers, or a AJ Smith Shauver, even like a Spencer Schwellenbach with the Braves? I think that is what that organization, the Tigers, need more. Do you think we could end up with a situation where it's like, here are 2 big league ready pitchers and like the 4th best prospect in this system?
It's going to be really interesting, because the Tigers aren't telegraphing anything right now. They are playing this very, very close to the vest. And so when I look at all of these teams, I can't like make the assumption that I know what the Tigers want, need, or are looking for. There are obvious things, like if you look at the rotation, as you said, when you're losing Tarik Skubal and Casey Mize is going to be a free agent and Jack Flaherty is going to be a free agent, I understand you got Troy Melton back, and he's looked awesome. Like, he looks like a 2 right now. You're getting Jackson Joe back from Tommy John surgery, and his stuff looks good, and he's going to be in the rotation going forward. And you sign Framber Valdez, and you know, you can look at Ty Madden coming back, or Reese Olson from the shoulder, or Keiter Montero. Like, there are possibilities there to fill out a rotation. I think ultimately, aren't the Tigers just going to try and get the most talent? Like, isn't it? Yeah. I just feel like if you're trying to bring people back right now for Skubal to say, hey, we're still going to give the old college try here and make a push like we did a couple of years ago, where we, you know, backdoored a playoff spot in the last week of the season. I guess that's, yeah, I get it. But this to me is about 2027 and 28 and 29 and beyond that. Yeah. And that should be what the priority is. Figuring out what the absolute most talent you can get back is and doing that.
So my last Google question is related to that, where if it is about the raw talent, no team has more and can afford to do more than the Dodgers. It's not necessarily that their system is better than Tampa Bay or Milwaukee. That's probably comparable. It's that the Dodgers have a higher appetite to seed players because they can backfill them much more easily than the Brewers or the Rays. And so my question is not specifically about the Dodgers. It's, how is Tarik Skubal not a Dodger? What is the storyline that unfolds between now and 6 p.m. on Monday? What has to happen for the Dodgers to not pay the biggest price to not go above and beyond these other teams to see Scooble end up in Atlanta or Milwaukee or Tampa or somewhere else?
The price has to get so high, it just becomes offensive to the Dodgers, who, despite what everybody thinks, this is not an organization that has gone and won the World Series strictly on the backs of, you know, money bags being carried around and thrown at players. That element is true. They are extremely good at spending money. But guess what? They're extremely good at developing talent. They're extremely good at making trades. They're extremely good at identifying players who are going to be good and drafting and developing them. Jordan, have you spent any time just looking at the top prospects stats from the Dodgers this season? Like the top 15 or 20 guys?
I've never seen this many outfielders. The outfield depth is comical. I mean, it's like I don't even know, and that's part of why you can point at them, but it's that they could literally afford to move these. But yes. Now you could say there are also people that be like, how many of these players have become good major leaguers for the Dodgers? Now there's reasons why that hasn't happened. There's people mm-hmm. that say that part of their pitching development is maybe overrated in some respects because of what they've been able to do. But I think this year with guys like Justin Robleski, and they have had some examples where it's like, no, they're probably, it's not just the guys that they have traded away, guys that maybe they haven't, right? How many times have they turned down offers for players that have ended up helping them? You know, who's to even say? So, yeah, I mean, just going back to you here. Yeah, the depth is comical. How many guys that you could imagine a front office looking at? Whereas other teams, yeah, they're highly ranked, they're early draft picks, but they might not be having mm-hmm. as good of a season. You have, as you just mentioned, you got 15 mm-hmm. players having incredible seasons that are, it's just easier to swallow.
Every one of them is hitting 300, 400, 500. Like, it's absurd. And you see the numbers and you wonder about the context and ballpark environment and stuff like that. And I did a little exercise with a couple of GMs last night where I was like, hey, can you run me through what your model has with the Dodgers outfielders? And, you know, there were differing opinions, but we went over like 10 guys, and it was interesting to hear one team that liked 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, and 10. The other team liked 6 and 9. Like, it, yeah. Whatever your desire is, whatever your model says, the Dodgers always have somebody who likes one of their guys. And right. it's pretty incredible for this time of year. And Jake, I think you asked a really fair question right there. The answer almost should be nothing. There's nothing that should get in the way of the Dodgers doing this, because yeah. they do have such advantages, because unlike the Brewers and unlike the Rays, this, you know, this isn't the avenue on which their championship is built. With the Brewers and Rays, it's like you are taking from your lifeblood and using it for forbidden fruit. I know I'm mixing my metaphors here, but you're taking something that has put you into the position you are right now and going and getting the very thing that you laugh at others for overpaying for. And the right. Dodgers are just like, yeah, take these 6 outfielders. We got 3 more. And we'll buy it if we don't.
I think, so I'm going to answer my own question here, half, which is the way that they don't do it is if all of their injured pitchers are actually fine. And they have just been slow playing Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow mm-hmm. because they can. And Ohtani is actually going to play in October. And they enter with 5 legitimate all-star level starters at their best between Yamamoto, Robleski, Ohtani, Glasnow, and Snell. And if they view that quintet as healthy and ready to go, and good Roki, big glove Roki.
Good Roki's back.
Not crying Roki. Good Roki's back. That's 6 guys. And then it's like, okay, yeah, you could go get Scooble, but like it doesn't actually, like, yes, he would start game 1. I understand that. Sure. But the upgrade from Scooble to Robleski is like smaller than it would be for any other team, I guess. And so I think that is the how. The how is if the director of medical for the Dodgers calls Andrew Friedman and says, everyone's great. We sent them to Germany for the weird Bartolo Colon blood transfusion regime, and everyone's great now. Is that going to happen between now and Monday? Probably not. But in my mind, that is the path.
I think that's fair. I'm just curious what the total package looks like in the end. Like, what is going to get this done? And can another team that we haven't mentioned, you know, the main four teams there, I think, are pretty reasonable with the Dodgers, the Brewers, the Rays, and the Braves. Do the Cubs get in there and try and backdoor something? Like, the Cubs don't have the pitching. Yeah, they don't have the pitching, but they do have quite a cache of, like, big league now position players. Like, I think Pedro Ramirez can play. And giving Matt Shaw some full-time run there. And the Tigers have some holes in their infield. Like, they've struggled to patch that thing over this year. So it's not unreasonable to think beyond that, the Tigers in, you know, Scott Harris was in Chicago beforehand. So the relationship with the Cubs is there. There are all these elements where...
Jeff, Scott Harris was in San Francisco before this. Could the Giants be in play for Tarek Skubal? Stay tuned.
Skubal for Devers, straight up.
Skubal straight up for the scooter that Harrison Bader crashed into the fire truck. We will talk about that later on this episode at Good, Bad, Ugly. Jordan, let's finish things up with Jeff and get away from Skubal chat, because one man can only dominate so much of our minds. All right, we'll take a quick break from our conversation with Jeff Pass, and we'll be right back.
Jeff, I mean, your mega trade deadline preview is a terrific resource, and we're only going to have time to cover a few teams here this morning. But, I mean, listen, not to give Jeff too much credit, but the reason he's good at his job is because this preview does include Rube Waddell, as he referenced earlier, but it also includes, you know, Francisco Renteria and William Bergoya and other prospects that you probably have not thought about.
I love William Bergoya.
You must love look, William Bergoya, because to include William Bergoya, who, as you know, is out for the season with a broken leg, the fact that he made it into this story is like, anyway, White Sox prospect. Okay, let's get to some actual Jeff Passan intel here, right? There's a lot of information in this preview, which we obviously appreciate, and we could dig through there. But we're going to actually keep it broad. Same question I think we asked you when it came to our offseason preview. The main characters, who are the teams? We just covered four of them. Maybe you could bring them up again. But just like, who are the teams that when Monday 6 p.m. comes, it's like, wow, that is a team that either did a lot, whether they offloaded a bunch, whether they bought a bunch. Last year, the two ends of the spectrum, of course, the Padres, no surprise. The Minnesota Twins last year, the main character with their massive teardown. There are some real candidates on both ends of the spectrum this season. But you can go in either direction. But as far as teams going big, because in you break it down into teams going big, that could go in both directions. Who's a team, maybe beyond that Skubal quartet we already talked about, that you think could really be in the news and you be tweeting about them a bunch over the next few days?
Oh, man. I mean, it could be the Boston Red Sox. It could be the New York Yankees. It could be in another direction, the Los Angeles Angels. I'm super curious to see if Paul DeBoney does anything like interesting in Washington. I don't think the Nats are motivated necessarily to go and move a guy like CJ Abrams. But I also think, is there going to be a point at which CJ Abrams' value is higher than it is right now? He's in the middle of the best season of his career. He's in the middle of one of the hottest stretches of his career. He's a guy who, if you add him, could make a team like Tampa Bay, for example, a championship, you know, even more of a championship caliber team. And, you know, during any discussions for Theo Gillen, they need someone with multiple years of control. CJ Abrams actually qualifies there. So what's going to happen with the Los Angeles Angels to me is incredibly interesting. An interim GM with three potential franchise changing deals. And he's got to work through that. John Mozeliak does and figure out, okay, what am I going to do? And then he's got to go to Artie Moreno and say, hey, got this on the table. Can I do it? And we know how that goes. The Phillies, to me, they're fascinating just because I don't know what direction they're going to go in. They need a lot. For a team that's, frankly, as good as they are, they need a lot. And I don't know how they're going to go about getting it. And then, of course, San Diego. The ask guys on Mason Miller and Adrian Morejon is beyond right now. It is absurd. I mean, for Miller, how do you think AJ Preller starts his conversations with other GMs when it comes to Mason Miller?
Well,
have the lot.
And then a chocolate frog just goes and jumps out the window. It's great. The conversation starts like this. Essentially, if Mason Miller is going to be in play, everyone in your organization needs to be accessible. Everyone. Mm-hmm. So if he's talking about the Brewers, that means Jesus Mate is going to be there. If he's talking with the Seattle Mariners, Kate Anderson has to be on the table. And, you know, for some organizations, they are deeply turned off by that. And yet they also understand when you have a guy of the quality of Mason Miller who has the impact, not just in games right now, but the GM was saying this to me yesterday. It is disproportionately impactful in the playoffs to have someone like Mason Miller upon whom you can rely like they do, because once you get into the playoffs, it really is an every inning matters situation. And that ninth inning, we have a statistic for that championship probability added, and closers of teams that are in there for every game, like they're quite high up on that list. So it's the one time a year where the idea of a one inning guy, oh, he's only going to throw 60 or 70 innings. No, these are important leverage innings. And it's why AJ Preller wants multiple top 10 prospects from an organization for the rental of Adrian Morejon, who is probably the best actual reliever that's out on the market right now. It's quite a weak relief year. And teams are getting a little snippy about that. And I think, you know, part of the reason we saw AJ Minter move early is because Minnesota wanted the bird in hand. And the Mets wanted to sort of stack their levels just in terms of when they're dealing guys. Like there's a timing element to all of this. And the way that each of these teams individually approaches it, it's, to me, the most fascinating part of the deadline.
Because you never know, with 30 minutes left, you might get a call from Craig Breslow asking you to trade Joe Ryan. And you're like, do not have time for this right now. My last question is about David Stearns and the New York Mets, who have endured a mountain of woe all season long. Stearns' reputation as an executive has taken a serious hit. Over the last year, this was someone who showed up in New York with real bona fides, has basically shed those bona fides gradually since the OMG Mets went away. What can Stearns do at this deadline to start building the next good Mets team? Because there are really two different paths, and I'm curious which one you think he takes. Is he going to sell all the rentals, or is he going to go beyond that?
I don't think he's going much beyond that. I mean, Luke Weaver, not a rental. I think sure. He will go, but are you talking like Lindor? Is that more along the lines of what you're thinking?
Lindor's not going anywhere. I'm talking like Alvarez. Do they try and offload Bichette? Are they going to try and reshuffle the deck for 2027? Do they believe in like the Beatty Alvarez Vientos group, or are they going to try and move on from those guys to trade?
Does anyone? I'm just saying,
I believe in Alvarez. I don't believe in the other two, but I believe in Alvarez.
What are any of them getting back at this point, though? Like, I don't think you're going to be going to get any sort of a franchise changing return for Francisco Alvarez at this point. And that's why, to me, all the energy needs to be spent trying to figure out how are you going to take a good group compared to their peers, but not necessarily an elite group in a vacuum. How are you going to take them and maximize that? And I thought the return for Minter, who's in his walk year, was perfectly fine. Billy Amick can't field and might not be able to hit for average. Bruin Agbayani is 19 years old and has tools, but he's still 19 years old, has big league bloodlines, still 19 years old. And you don't expect a whole great return for an AJ Minter. I'm more curious to see what they get for Clay Holmes. I had a team tell me yesterday that they dropped out on Holmes because Stearns is essentially suggesting that the price has gotten high enough where it was beginning to get uncomfortable. And so I do think they're going to do well for Clay Holmes. The Freddie Peralta return is doomed to look bad because it will always be compared to where it was 6 months ago. And when the Mets went out and gave up Jet Williams and Brandon Sproat to get him, they understand, like, didn't work. And Freddie Peralta, the Freddie Peralta tenure in New York, I think, is not going to be known for a whole lot. Is going to be easily forgotten. But maybe they get someone back in this deal.
Statue? Do you think the statue goes like by the casino or the soccer stadium?
What would the size of the statue be? My anniversary earlier this year, I try to, do you know there are like different types of gifts for every anniversary? You know, like the traditional, like, and then there's amethyst, a modern. Or,
this is definitely something that Jordan's wife knows all of the different years for, because she is.
Can she name it like Tyler Kepner can World Series winners? Like, is it? So I'm looking this year,
and
this
Kepner level.
This year, 19th anniversary is bronze. I was like, man, it's a really good like bronze sculptor who lives in Kansas City. I'm gonna go and look at his studio and see what we got there. Do you know how expensive bronze is? I walked home that day with the saddest little statue. It's like, I've been married to you for 19 years. Here's a trinket. And I'm just wondering, like, is the Freddie Peralta statue just like going to be Lego sized, or what's that? Is it going to be one of those, like, this is what's the scale going to be? 200 to 1?
Like Ant-Man.
My question is, how does it compare to the Justin Verlander Mets statue? Is it going to be more, certainly cheaper, you know, but in terms of those forgettable tenures, there's actually a few contenders there.
I almost forgot that Justin Verlander was a Met. What weird years those were.
Exactly. All right, Jeff, before we let you go. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Jake.
I was going to say, I was there. I saw Justin Verlander on the Mets. He was this wild times. Jeff, one bold prediction for this deadline besides Ryan Stanek extension with the Cardinals.
Oh, my God. You know, I hate bold predictions, man.
Be bold. Don't be cold.
I'm not bold, though.
Fine. Give me something cold. One cold. No. One cold prediction. If you don't want to do a bold prediction, one cold prediction.
Derek Scoobles going to the Dodgers.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, Jeff. My final question for you is a little bit more meta. It's not necessarily digging into a specific team or a specific player, but something that I have certainly given you plenty of grief over, but also plenty of credit, depending on the circumstance, involves your use of the all caps breaking. Now, this is, you know, not exclusive just to you, but as a, you know, prominent newsbreaker, especially on Twitter. This is part of the art form now, is to decide whether that this bit of news that you are indeed breaking, you are doing, you are informing the world, whether it deserves the all caps breaking. I believe so far, the Curtis Mead for Connolly early, which was kind of out of nowhere, that got an all caps breaking, and I loved it. I actually thought that was textbook. I thought that even if those names aren't necessarily huge, it was surprising because of the match and all those things. When it's a little bit less, you just hit him with a very standard trade news, colon, that just kills me, right? It's just like, news. Folks, don't get too excited. Just some news, just a little bit of news, just a little bit of trade news. With all that said, and by the way, this is also interesting because in the offseason, there's trades and signs, just, right?
I'm sorry, Jake, can you do it again?
Trade news.
In the offseason, Jake, Jeff, there's more genre. There's a larger genre of news to break, right? You have trades, you have signings, you have hirings and firings, whatever. Right now, we're just talking about trades. So a trade has to reach a threshold that we still do not totally know how to define. My question to you, last question to you, as we barrel towards the 6 p.m. Eastern deadline on Monday, over under, like, how many all caps breakings do we think we're going to get? Okay, Scoobal, we cashed that one. We wish you the best in breaking that news. We hope that you get it. That is obviously an all caps breaking. Okay, that's pretty obvious. We've been debating for the last few weeks, like, who's that next best player traded? You know, CJ Abrams, he gets traded. There's no doubt about that. Luis Arraez, you know, is that an all caps? That's an interesting line to debate. I think team involved. So I'll just say to you, do you want to call your shot? How many all caps breakings do you think you do before 6 p.m.? Jake, one more caveat before Jeff answers.
Jeff has done 4 all caps breakings since opening day. So this is not something that happens all the time. I know trade deadline season's a little different, but you've only had 4 since opening day.
What are the others?
So the 4 since opening day are Connolly early for Curtis Mead, JJ Weatherholt contract extension, the Patrick Bailey trade, and Shane Boz extension with the Orioles. I think it's interesting that you did Shane Boz and not Kyle Bradish for breaking.
I didn't have Bradish, that's why. I didn't break Bradish. Yeah. I would have done Bradish. I had the money first, but I did not have the actual deal being done first. And so the problem with predicting these things is I'm also essentially saying what I think my effectiveness is going to be. And like I said, I always have a bad day at the deadline. And so if you see a breaking in all caps where you feel like it's maybe not warranted for the situation, please understand that it might just be me trying to gas myself up after losing. There's a real possibility that I'm like, you know what? This lefty reliever going to a fringe contender, I'm going to put the all caps breaking there just because I need to feel good about myself. I need to pump myself up. And
that right there is the most insightful thing Jeff has said on this entire. you wanted to learn about Jeff Passan, not just the information he has. I think that was that was very honest. I appreciate that, Jeff.
Okay. So you guys want to hear a great story from the All-Star game? I'm down. I know that I'm going to be writing about the Olympics the next day and this agreement that they're trying to put together. And I want to talk with some players about staying in the Olympic Village. So it's the night of the Home Run Derby and go down into the National League clubhouse. And I see Joan Duran there and he's with a couple, he's with his kids, and ask him about the Olympics. You know, he played in the World Baseball Classic. He's like, yeah, I would love to stay in the Olympic Village. I shake his hand and I'm walking away. And he's like, hey, come over here for a sec. Walk over to him. And he's like, how do you get all the news? And it was really ironic that Joan Duran was the one to say this. Because last year, the great emasculation of my trade line was getting my ass kicked by Ken Rosenthal. Rosenthal on the Joan Duran trade. I was sitting there with one of my bosses, and I was convinced that Duran was going to Seattle. Like after all the conversations I was having about what was going on, sometimes, you know, like the art of the game sometimes is that you do not want to be too much of a pest with people who are trying to help you and who are trying to do their job, right? Who are trying to do something that's really important for wherever they're charting the course of their franchise. And so if you feel like you have a decent sense of where something's going, you'll just sit around and wait for people to get in touch with you. It's not pestering. You got to have some feel in that situation. And based on all my calls, I thought Duran was going to Seattle. So when I saw Rosenthal tweet out in the middle of a meeting with my boss, Duran to Phillies, it was just the biggest dick punch imaginable. And so for all the people to ask this and say, how do you get all the news? For him to be the one, and here's the thing though, I leveraged that opportunity as I try to do any that's presented to me and said to him, so this means you're going to tell me where you're signing in free agency, right? It's like, I got you, bro.
Always be grinding. Last deadline I have in front of me, Jeff, you had 7 all caps breakings at the deadline last year. That was Naylor.
Last one, I believe, was Griffin Jacks.
Yes, Naylor.
Yes.
Cabrian Hayes, Gino Suarez, Mason Miller, Carlos Correa, Merrill Kelly, and Griffin Jacks. I'll set the line this year at 7.5. Jordan, I will take the under on that line.
Under.
I am
hoping for over, and either way, now everyone can experience the deadline through this very meta stupid way that I have for quite some time. Jeff Passan, as you just described, I was about to say you're the best in the business, but you're at least one of the best. He doesn't get everything, but he gets a lot. Jeff Passan of ESPN, thank you so much for the time, and enjoy the deadline, whatever the heck that means for you.
I am so excited to type the words breaking Drew Anderson traded to.
Can't wait. Ryan Stanek.
I look forward to it. that's the ultimate inside joke if you do it.
It's happening.
Do it. Do it, Jeff. Do it, Jeff. Thank you.
Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbiecast. No more Jeff Passan on this episode. We had to send him to his little cave where he texts GMs and sends things out on threads. Let's do Good, Bad, Ugly because it is Friday. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing Dan Ugly from the weekend that was, the week that was, excuse me. Jordan, start us off.
My good this week, you know, I was going to say, oh, should I talk about Cody Clemens' ultimate grand slam? And then I was like, whatever. Let's talk about something that's actually historic. And that is the beginning of the Women's Pro Baseball League. We talked about this when it was announced, I guess, last year, 2 years ago. But it is officially starting this weekend in Springfield, Illinois. They'll be playing over the next month, 4 teams. This is a professional women's baseball league. This is a huge deal. I am so excited about this. You are going to be able to, I believe, watch these games on ESPN internationally. I think they're streaming them on YouTube. And I think why I'm so excited about this is a lot of the faces of women's baseball, the Kelsey Whitmores, Monet Davis, who's both of them are, of course, participating in this, Ayami Sato, who's really a trailblazer among Japanese women's baseball players. I'm so glad they're all involved and like they've been the leading voice in this. And Justin Siegel, of course, who's a really important voice and figure in women's baseball. But I love that we're just going to have a league now with stats and games and a full schedule that we get to find out who are the other awesome, you know, women baseball player in the world. We just had, we're going to have a Women's Baseball World Cup. They just had a regional with that in Illinois, also in Illinois this past week. Team USA dominated, no shock there, but I'm just excited to learn about more of these players and for them to get more exposure because we've had it so centered during the promotion of this league around a real select few, and that's deserved for sure. You got to kind of have those faces of the league.
Sure.
But I know for a fact that there are more players that are going to get a lot more attention because of this league, and that's really exciting. And there's three I wanted to shout out, but I wanted your just general thoughts as this league gets going before I
give. So I went to the tryouts last year, which were really fun.
Yeah.
That were at Nats Park. But you make a good point, is like the promotion of this league has kind of been around Kelsey Whitmore and Monet Davis, which makes sense because those are the two most prominent. There are definitely players that are as good that I don't know that much about, who are just going to come out in this league and bang, and then we'll know them as characters. The one thing I don't love about the league is that they decided to play it centrally in Springfield, Illinois, which is like not convenient and easy for people to get to. I would have loved to have seen them center it in a larger metropolitan area for the first year. Like if this was anywhere on the Eastern Seaboard, I would have made the trip. I'm not going to, fly to Chicago and drive to Springfield. I hope that people do, because this is going to be very cool.
Yeah, it's cool that they have a few former major leaguers that are managing. Keith Foulke, Matt Williams, and Eric Young Sr. are going to be three of the managers for the four teams. And then the three players I just wanted to mention, one is Ashton Lansdell, who played softball at Ole Miss. She's been hosting the official WPVL podcast on their YouTube channel, basically interviewing a ton of the players. I think she's already done like 20 episodes. She's awesome, and she was just the best player for Team USA in this tournament.
Did she do stuff with the bananas?
I think so. I mean, she's definitely gotten a lot more attention. I don't know if she's played like full games or toured with them, but she was a heck of a softball player and obviously now a heck of a baseball player as well. And then the two other names I wanted to mention, these are international. Leah Cornish, who also had the best stats. She's from Australia. She's on the same team, the same Los Angeles team as Ashton Lansdell. Her numbers in this tournament over the past week were absurd. And then the one I think I'm most excited about of any of them is Rain Padgham. I think she's 20 now, 21. She hit 83 on the mound as a 15-year-old. She's Canadian. And I don't know how hard she's throwing now, but if you watch video of her pitching, it is as good mechanics as you're really going to see from anyone of this age, let alone, a women player. So I don't know how hard she's throwing now. I just think that Rain Padgham, she's on the Boston team. I think she's going to get attention. I'm calling my shot there as far as pitchers in this league. I think she's the one, and obviously with an awesome name and some Canadian representation there. So yeah, I'm excited to see how this league goes and excited to learn more about the best players in the league. So WPVL, give it some love.
My good this week is Max Clark, who has been called up by the Detroit Tigers to make his major league debut this weekend in Sacramento, California. Max Clark, the number 3 overall pick in the 2023 draft behind Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz. We were surprised the Tigers took him at 3. We had kind of assumed that Wyatt Langford was going to be the selection there. It was not. They went with Clark. It has taken him a little bit longer to get to the big leagues as he was a high schooler out of Franklin, Indiana, of all freaking places. Max Clark is a fascinating character for a multitude of reasons. He is a fascinating character as he arrives in what will likely be the afterglow of the Tarek Skubal era in Detroit. The team will now belong to him and Kevin McGonigal. But Max Clark is kind of our first Gen Z baseball superstar, if he does play enough to be a superstar, whether that is the baggy pants or the oodles of chains or the way in which he probably unironically says unk. Like when I say unk, I'm doing a bit, right? He says unk and chopped like he means it. He's saying it with his chest. If you go follow Max Clark on Instagram, you will have a little bit of an idea what I'm talking about. And he has 464,000 Instagram followers, which I'm sure is more than most all-stars. Like right now, he has not played a big league game. Does the performance match the sauce? Does the batting line match the drip? That is the question. And if Max Clark is an elite level performer, he is going to be a very, very big deal. There are very few baseball players in our ecosystem that actively want to be really famous. Max Clark wants to be really famous. And if he hits, it will get him there.
Yeah, and yes, it's taken a little bit longer, but among his draft class, I mean, only Bryce Eldridge and Cole Emerson are the only two high schoolers that have reached the big leagues before him. So it's not like it's taken a long time. He's really heated up in AAA over the last month.
Yeah.
And I think the last element to Max Clark that I'm really excited about is in tandem is Walker Jenkins, who's the Twins top prospect who went fifth. And that was really the discussion, the debate was Clark and Jenkins that year. Jenkins will get called up at some point if he can. I mean, he's been so hurt, but if he can stay on the field, he will also get called up here soon by Minnesota. Comparing those two careers, and they're also very different personalities. Walker Jenkins is much more like, I am a baseball player. That is my focus. I am not looking for attention. I'm just trying to, you know, have a long major league career. Max Clark, he wants the smoke, and I love it. I saw Max play in high school. Yeah. It was very surreal to watch a player in that environment, just like all the kids in the town are running after every game and want his autograph and everything. So I'm excited for Max. I think he's a good kid. I think he also gets mislabeled as in a lot of respects, and I'm rooting for him. I know he's going to draw some people that are going to be rooting against him, but I think Max is a good kid. Max is a good kid, and I'm looking forward to seeing his career unfold.
I will do my bad first so that you can piggyback off of mine. Harrison yes. Bader, get off your scooter, you idiot. Harrison Bader, who has been out for much of the season for the San Francisco Giants, signed a 2-year contract there over the winter, has missed time due to plantar fasciitis in his foot. And he thought, you know, it would be a good way to fix my foot is get drunk, ride a scooter into the back of a fire truck and have the truck run over my foot.
You're gonna need to clarify, because for those who have not seen this reporting might be a little bit shook and might want to hear what you just said a little bit clearer. So can you give a little bit more background on what happened here?
Harrison Bader, this is from multiple reports. Allegedly, alleged reports, seems to have been boozing late night in San Francisco. He got on a scooter to scoot his way home. He was not in a state of sobriety. Allegedly, upon doing so, and scootered into the back of a fire truck that seems to have been moving. The truck then ran over the affected foot, which complicated the upcoming trip he had to have the foot examined. Hey, my plantar fasciitis is hurting me. Well, Harrison, I think your foot's also broken. Oh, what happened? I got run over by a fire truck. And most concerningly, this is not the first time Harrison Bader has gotten into a scooter accident in 2014 when he was at the University of Florida. He was suspended from the team after he was involved in a scooter accident in which alcohol may have been involved. That time he also struck a parked car. First thing, if you're drinking, don't get on a scooter. Just don't do it. It's not cool. It's a no-no for me. If you're a baseball player, you probably shouldn't be on a scooter whether or not you're drinking at night. And if you're a baseball player with foot injuries, that applies even more so. I'm curious to see if the Giants try and recoup some of the salary that they were owed to Harrison Bader, because this is the type of thing that can void a salary if you are drinking and scootering and being a dum-dum.
Yeah, and also bad is Tony Vitello asked about it, was like, yeah, you know, he wasn't going to play again this year anyway because of this plantar fasciitis issue.
And so then the Giants were like, no, we don't want to pay him, no.
Well, I'm just saying that it's funny that he was like, well, the good news is that he wasn't going to play this year again anyway. And this is just the separate incident that doesn't actually matter that much. It's like, all right, well, add it to the list of Giants things that make you go, what? How did we get here? Somehow, this is...
Yeah. This is, I just want to say, cannot happen as it gets.
Hmm. Yeah, it's up there. Here's another contender. We go to Sacramento for my bad, in which another Giants employee is riding a scooter. I don't know if the Giants own the Sacramento River Cats. One of the strangest things that we just accept as normal is not that the A's are playing in a AAA ballpark. It's that AAA ballpark is still used by the Giants AAA team when they are not there. Very weird. Like, I don't think that element of this sharing is made enough of as just one of... I think when we look back at this situation in 10, 15 years, that detail will be like, wait, but the River Cats were still playing there? And it's not even their own affiliate. Anyway, last week, the Dodgers affiliate, the Oklahoma City Comets, who employ Alec Thomas. For those of you who did not know, the Dodgers traded for Alec Thomas from the D-backs earlier this season. He's been in AAA since then. He has not played a major league game for the Dodgers. However, Alec Thomas was hopping out of the dugout to go out to play defense, and the mascot for the River Cats was scooting down the foul line and just absolutely trucked him. This is very funny.
Laid his ass out.
I mean,
out. He
rocked him. Now, I should say, the reason we can laugh about this now is that Alec Thomas was fine. He has played, he stayed in the game, played the rest of the game. Okay, so we've established that. This is also in the that cannot happen. However, I will say this is not to defend the mascot. Having been to a ton of minor league games and honestly major league games, I genuinely am surprised that this does not happen more. I think that was my real takeaway from this, is maybe not this kind of collision or, you know, a vehicle involved, but even in the majors, like, mascots are moving. They are often driving vehicles. And I'm sure at the major league level, these are real professionals that would never make a mistake like this. But it is very common between innings for stuff to be happening right here, and the players are running out to play defense. Like, I kind of can't believe that this doesn't happen more. It was really my takeaway from this, but it is still inexcusable.
We've never seen a third baseman get clocked in the head by a t-shirt gun. We've never seen the Fanatics ATV run over a foot like Harrison Bader.
Right.
It feels like these things will happen in time. Yeah. Don't do this. If you're a mascot, just look both ways before you scoot down the foul line.
I also love that, like, the collision was so perfect that it wasn't even like he had time to, like, swerve out of the way. Like, it was a direct. It wasn't like the
Alec
mascot
Thomas
was like, oh,
just
no!
got
tried to get out of the way.
Jacked up.
Perfect. All right. You want to do Ugla first and then I'll finish?
Sure. My Ugla is really a bad, and it's Jaren Duran, who last night...
Also Sacramento.
Last night, had a short fly ball to left field. Wilson Contreras did not tag up. Jaren Duran then turned and yelled at Wilson Contreras for not tagging up. It was an obvious don't tag. Like, it was not that deep, and Soderstrom was in left, and he's got a good arm. And then after the game, he slammed an iPad at one point and was like being a baby. After the game, he was asked about it. He said, it's nothing. And then he immediately said, it's something within the team that we work on, and it's nothing. So I just want to read this quote again. This is the most nonsensical quote I've heard in a long time. It's from Christopher Smith. Jaren Duran asked about his gesture towards third base. Quote, that's nothing. It's something within the team that we have that we work on, and it's nothing. You guys don't need to know. Nobody needs to know. That's something between us and the team that we know what it's about. Jaren Duran. My guy. How dumb do you think we are? How dumb do you think we are? Here's what happened. You're being a baby. You're being a big freaking baby. You're embarrassed, and your teammates are protecting you. They all handled it well. Yes. They kept it in-house best they could, because Contreras and Chad Tracy aren't going to say, oh, things are going great now in Boston. Jaren Duran can't hit the broadside of a barn. He's yelling at us, and that's not cool. No, they protected him, and that's the right thing to do. And there's a part of this where I do feel bad for Jaren Duran. Like, he's been playing so bad, and it's clearly wearing on him and making him do more rational things than he would have done before. But this is the big leagues. You have to be an adult. I understand that he's had mental health struggles, and I commend him for being public about that. Having mental health problems does not allow you to be a schmuck all the time. Like, you have to take an element of responsibility for your behavior, and he has not done that. And the reason I have this in Ugla is because I can't remember anything like this. I can't remember a player having this many, fiascos, this many, blow-ups in a season without any real repercussions.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox-Duran relationship and the, let alone just his career on the field, has just been beyond bizarre. So I agree with that. And I think, credit to his, definitely Ugla, and credit to his teammates. And honestly, and what I'm going to say is going to sound like flippant, but I really mean it. I do think that Wilson Contreras is like, okay, this guy's screaming at me to run. This guy's really pissed, even though it's obviously absurd. And Wilson Contreras is like, you know what? Sometimes when I have not been feeling great, I have said and done things that I don't mean. And so I'm going to be patient with that. And yeah, credit to Wilson Contreras. He is the leader that clearly this team needed all along, or at least at points during this season. And Duran has unfortunately been detracting from that at certain points. All right, we'll finish up with a tweet from Joel Embiid. Ever heard of him?
LeBron's teammate.
Sixers signed LeBron. We know that. Joel Embiid is a baseball fan. He was at the All-Star game, I believe, in Philadelphia. He has shown up at postseason games in the past. He'll tweet about baseball here and there. He'll tweet about the Phillies. But Joel Embiid is also, he does like to troll. That's not news. However, this is just kind of inscrutable. And maybe if you're an NBA Joel Embiid fan, you're like, yeah, this is just Joel, like whatever, just move on. It's not that big of a deal. And I'm not saying it's a big deal. It's just ugly. It's strange. The Phillies got swept by the Marlins this week. One of those games was a complete Yoan Duran disaster, which happens like once a month, but normally doesn't. They get walked off by the Marlins. And 30 minutes after that loss, Joel Embiid tweets, I have a good feeling about October. The playoffs are going to be fun. Okay. And then, so already like, all right, like, are you making fun of the Phillies? Are you saying like, don't worry about this? Like, who cares? Then someone replies and they're like, okay, Joel, who's our second team after the Phillies, Joel? Caminero and Tampa Bay need our support. That's just from an account who's being like, hey, you're watching baseball. If it's not the Phillies, because maybe this person is a Phillies fan, is like, I'm not feeling so good about the Phillies right now. Who should we support? To which Joel Embiid responds, three-peat, baby. So I guess I'm saying, all right, well, if the Phillies suck, I'll root for the Dodgers. Which is just continuing on with Joel Embiid being a troll and maybe just not caring and or just trying to get attention. I don't know.
Pretty funny.
I don't know what to make of this. It's very funny. It's very ugly. I don't think Phillies fans should. I actually think, if anything, it's Joel Embiid being like, I am basically bulletproof in Philly. I am one of the most beloved athletes that the city has ever had. Even with all the ups and downs and all the missed games and all the injuries and all the playoff exits, they still love Embiid. So he's like, screw it. Three-peat. Go Dodgers. What are you going to do? I'm Joel Embiid.
Cowboys. He's Cowboys, Dodgers, Bruins. So funny, man.
No, but I love Embiid. But this is definitely ugly. And I hope he keeps tweeting about baseball. I hope he has some deadline takes. That's what I'm really hoping for, is that Embiid tweets about the Phillies deadline.
Maybe he'll watch our deadline show on Monday, which all of you should as well. That's right, friends. Monday afternoon, 5:30 to 7 o'clock. As the deadline tolls, the procrastination is annoying, but it does ensure that we'll have some real action. As we are live on the air on multiple platforms, you should tune in and watch as we react to the deadline. Will we be going dark this year? Probably not, but we should talk about it.
Will we get an all caps breaking during our live deadline show? How sweet would that be? But even if not, we can show our appreciation to Jeff Passan for giving us a lot of time as the deadline approaches. So thank you to Jeff for joining us. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas, our producing duo. We appreciate both of them so much. Everyone have a good weekend. We will talk to you all from the studio. So yeah, no pod Monday morning. Tune in live, Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel. We'll be on a few different platforms. Join us for the deadline, Monday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. We will talk to you then. Until then, enjoy them trades.